From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Fairfax, California.
Glen Park.
Fillmore.
I'm from San Jose.
I'm from the Intermission.
UCCC World.
West Oakland.
East Oakland.
Coming up, the Affordable Care Act is in place nationwide. So how's it going so far in California?
There are a lot of people out there that need coverage, and they don't have it, you know, my family being an example.
Then we'll meet a young woman who's turned the urge to fight into an Olympic dream.
I don't want to be known as this girl. I didn't want to be known like that. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to box.
And we'll spend some time with people using street theater to commemorate young men lost to violence.
I really wanted to kind of charge that ground, kind of take it back, kind of reclaim those spaces.
Stay with us for Cross Currents. Today marks the second day of the partial government shutdown that began Monday night when Congress failed to pass a budget. At the heart of the debate over funding federal operations is the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, which Congress passed and the president signed into law in 2010. Since then, it's become a symbolic battleground for Democrats and Republicans. From all the fighting on the Hill, you might get the impression that Obamacare will be tied up in red tape forever. But in California, it's just a click away. Yesterday, the state unveiled its new insurance options called Covered California. These marketplaces, known as exchanges, are a new way for people who are uninsured to purchase health insurance plans that meet the new law's requirements. Consumers who log on should find standardized, easy-to-compare health plans, plus information about the federal subsidies to help pay for them. About half the states are using a federally run exchange. California is the largest of the 17 states that chose to set up their own systems. The Golden State also has the country's highest number of uninsured people, more than 7 million. In the Bay Area alone, over 500,000 people are uninsured. One family in San Francisco was among the first online to buy health insurance. KALW's Daniel Moore brings you that story.
All right. That's where we're going. Here we are, Covered California, your destination for affordable, quality health care, including Medi-Cal. Start here. All right, here we go.
That's Jennifer Alexander. She's behind her laptop waiting to apply online for health insurance through Covered California.
Taking a little while to load. I'm guessing that it's getting a lot of hits today.
I'm in her living room just hours after the website for Covered California went live. Jennifer's 16-month-old daughter, Lucia, is napping in the back of the apartment.
And we're waiting. Well, let's see, it's loading.
This is the narrow window of time that she's carved out to shop for insurance for her family. Jennifer and I are both staring at her computer screen. And we're waiting and waiting.
Ah, here we go. All right. Loaded correctly this time. I'm sure there are thousands and thousands of other people out there doing exactly what I'm doing right now.
We've had huge interest. We've had literally as many as 10,000 hits a second. Not a minute, not an hour, a second.
Peter Lee, director of Covered California, spoke with me after a press conference yesterday.
Californians are hungry for coverage they can depend on, they can rely on, to give them peace of mind. But I want to remind everyone, they don't all need to enroll today. They have 3 months to get enrolled to have coverage that'll start January 1.
But a lot of people don't want to take any chances. People like Jennifer Alexander. Jennifer and I are still staring at the Covered California website and watching as the pictures load slowly.
Guess there are a lot of people in my shoes out there.
Jennifer is self-employed and purchases her health insurance and her daughter's privately through Blue Shield.
I've spent most of my career working as a freelancer, so I've been on the individual insurance market for, you know, about 18 years now, and the offerings that have been available for somebody who does the work that I do have been very poor.
Her frustrations have included high deductibles and poor coverage for routine procedures.
This past January, I noticed that I had a mole that had enlarged, and I knew I wanted to go see the doctor to have it checked.
Do you remember how much you paid?
At least around $500 or $600 out of the $1,700 that the lab and the hospital billed for just looking at a small mole.
Her health care plan is actually ending on December 31st because of the Affordable Care Act. To remain insured, she'll need to purchase health insurance through Covered California.
How many people are in your household? I can answer that. There are three. Age of head of household. Do they mean me or my husband? I'm not sure.
The Affordable Care Act is supposed to help out people like Jennifer's husband, Kiko Omond. He's a 44-year-old software engineer who doesn't have any coverage at all.
I have a pre-existing condition. I used to have high cholesterol, but I, you know, changed my diet and started exercising. And now I have normal cholesterol, but I still cannot get insured. Every time I tried to sign up for an individual plan, I got turned down by five different insurers because of this pre-existing condition.
Under the Affordable Care Act, insurers cannot deny coverage or charge higher rates because of pre-existing health conditions. But Kiko must get insurance by March 31st, or he'll face a financial penalty.
Okay, income per year. I guess I have to pick something out to put in here right now. I guess I'll go with this year. And so I'm going to say we're probably going to fall in this category about right now. I'm going to say $70,000 or so.
Jennifer has a lot of questions, and often she just guesses at the best answer. Eventually, she finishes typing in her demographics and starts to answer questions about how much health care her family uses. Then she gets to
preview plans. Let's do that. And they're going to help me compare insurance health plans. So they're going to estimate our costs.
In most places around the Bay Area, for example, there are about five different plan companies. And then within that, there'll be multiple policies as well available.
That's Betsy Imholtz, Director of Special Projects for the Consumers Union, which lobbied for the Affordable Care Act.
So, you know, it's good for people to go in with a provider in mind if they have a specific doctor or other provider they want to stay with or have a particular drug that they need. Have that all sort of in front of you and then go explore and see what's available in your area and how much it might cost.
Yeah. Okay, find your doctor. Yes, I do have a doctor that I prefer. Okay. I just typed in my doctor's name, but it didn't find the record, so I'm going to have to go back and try and type her name in differently. Okay. No matching records found. Well, I know she's a doctor. That's funny. Uh-oh. I think she might have woken up.
We're waiting for another page to load.
Still waiting.
Her baby's cries get louder.
I'm going to go. I think that's her back there.
The website's still loading, so we go to check on her daughter. A few minutes later, we're back with Lucia.
Oh, look, we spent all that time away, and it's still loading.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's going to load.
I don't think it's going to load either.
That was a good 5 minutes as we've been waiting for it to load.
I know. I think I'm going to wait for a couple days until, you know, the traffic has died down a little bit and then revisit.
The enrollment part of the Covered California website was suspended last night to make improvements, so Jennifer has to wait another day. She has time before her health insurance runs out December 31st, but for her and millions of other Californians, the clock is ticking. In San Francisco, I'm Daniel Moore for Cross Currents.
You can find California's new health exchange online at coveredca.com. It's not Covered California, it's coveredca.com. And if you need help, you can reach a navigator at 800-300-1506. But be aware that it could take a while. This is what we heard when we called.
Your expected wait time is greater than 30 minutes. Please continue to hold, and your call will be answered by the next available agent.
Did you try to use Covered California yesterday? How did it go for you? You can let us know by calling 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message at 415-264-7106. You can always get through to us.
Your call is important to us and will be answered in the order it was received.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. San Francisco's Bayview neighborhood has been going through a lot of changes recently. redevelopment at the shipyard, new housing projects going up, and new businesses moving in. Still, Bayview's crime rates are among the highest in San Francisco. It can be a rough neighborhood to grow up in, but sometimes being in a tough place just makes you tougher.
Because I wanted to be known for something better. It was a point to prove to myself that I was better than a street fighter.
Producer Mitzi Mock has the story of one of the Bayview's greatest success stories about a young woman who fought her way to the top.
At first glance, Raquel Miller has more than a few things in common with a Hollywood heiress. She wears her hair in long, soft curls or braids, carries a bedazzled Hello Kitty iPhone case that matches her neon pink Nikes, and she always has her miniature dog in tow. Not exactly the stuff to scare you away. But if you knew Raquel in high school, any one of the high schools she attended, you might have thought twice about bumping into her.
I went to Galileo, I went to McAteer, I went to 1950, and then I ended up going to Independence High School. I didn't do that well with around a lot of my peers, and some of it was because of fighting.
Raquel was mostly getting into street fights, schoolyard brawls, and as she got older, her friends didn't miss a chance to remind her of all the times she started trouble.
Yeah, remember you did this? And I was like, be quiet. Like, shut up. Like, don't say that. I'd be embarrassed.
All this teasing eventually made her think.
I don't want to be known as this girl. Like, I didn't want to be known like that. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to box. Because I wanted to be known for something better. It was a point to prove to myself that I was better than a street fighter.
At first, Raquel figured becoming a boxer would be easy. She found a coach and told them she was ready to jump in the ring. But it turned out, becoming a boxer would take a lot of work. Work like running, weightlifting, and most of all, discipline.
I didn't want to train. I knew how to street fight, and I figured that translated into boxing. And the coach said no. Sparring was a privilege, and if I wasn't willing to put in the work, I wasn't going to spar. So I said I quit.
Over the next couple years, Raquel couldn't quite shake the feeling that she'd given up too quickly, so she tried again. This time she worked out daily, changed her diet, and even found a new coach. But after a while, she realized he wasn't really on her side.
He didn't believe the women deserved to be in the ring, and he told me that I should be a ring card girl.
You know, the women in hot pants that hold up cards announcing each round of a boxing tournament.
It took something out of me. I was like, you know what? Guys don't believe in women boxing, and usually the best coaches are males for the most part, and so I was discouraged.
Raquel thought this time she was quitting for good. But a few months later, something made her reconsider. It happened when she was traveling in Brazil with a friend.
And she just said to me, you know, what's one thing that you've always wanted to do that you've never done? And I said, I always wanted to be a boxer. So we made a promise to each other, this time, no matter what, I'm not stopping.
And for the rest of the trip, Raquel's friend wouldn't let her forget that promise. She bragged to all the locals.
She's going to be a famous boxer. She's going to the Olympics.
Now, when most of us make promises to our friends, it's generally for things like keeping a secret or showing up for a special occasion. Things that fit comfortably in the realm of possibility. But when Raquel made this pact, back in 2010, she made a much bigger promise. One that teetered on crazy. With less than 2 years before the Olympic Games in London, the first to ever include women's boxing, she promised her friend and herself that she would earn a spot on Team USA. And that meant spending all her coming days in the ring.
So, sir, how you feeling?
Good.
Ready to put this work in?
Let's work.
That's Jairo Escobar, one of Raquel's current trainers. They grew up a couple blocks away from each other in the Bayview. Now they meet several nights a week at World's Gym on 16th and Mission to practice sparring and study techniques.
Hey, did you see those videos I was talking about?
I did.
What'd you think about it? You kind of see what I'm talking about?
I definitely saw the Pacquiao video. Exactly, yeah. What he was doing.
Like when he was in the inside cash, he knew how to pop, pop.
And this little baby,
yeah,
punches.
Yeah, and he knew where like his hands were at all times. Okay. Yeah.
This time around, Raquel committed her life to boxing. And according to Jairo, what she lacked in experience, she quickly made up for in work ethic and instinct.
Because boxing is not just fighting, it's not brawling. It's technique, it's work. You know, sometimes you lose fights based on just stamina. Raquel doesn't slack, and it's like every day she gets better, she's just getting better and better.
No one's had a better view of Raquel's transformation than her sister, Tanisha. She often stops by to watch Raquel train.
Who's cooking dinner tonight? You missed. How many did she miss? five times when she stopped.
When Raquel started training again, her car was broken down, and Tanisha was her daily ride.
And I would come and stay in the car and fall asleep or whatever I had to do just to be there to give her a ride back home when she was done with practicing.
When no one believed, when I was really hungry, when I was like tired and sweaty, and she was the one that said, just keep going. Like, I believe. They don't have to believe. I believe.
So Raquel kept going, kept believing. And what's amazing is how little time it took for Raquel to become a boxer, a really good boxer. In less than 2 years, she started winning national tournaments and qualified for the World Championships in Beijing, a precursor to the Olympics in London.
Well, Miller in the red corner, not even boxing 2 years.
It was the first time Tanisha couldn't be there to cheer Raquel on in person. So she woke up every morning at 2 a.m. to watch the fights online.
And I'm like, oh my God, you can do it. Go, baby girl. I'm like seeing all this stuff like I would normally say if I was there. It's like seeing, you know, my kid in there, not just fighting, but pursuing her dream.
Congratulations to Raquel Miller of San Francisco, USA.
Raquel, she won a silver medal in China and was selected to go to the Olympic Games in London as part of the first U.S. women's boxing team. But this time, it would only be as an alternate.
I prayed endlessly to go to London. And I would talk to God and I would say, God, you know, just let me go to London. God, I want to go to London. I want to go to London. And I was like, God gave me my wish. I kept saying, God, I want to go to London. I should have said, God, I want to go compete in London and be an Olympian, not just here. So I got what I wished for. So this time when I pray, I said, God, I want to go compete in Rio. God, I want to win a gold medal.
To make it to Rio in 2016, Raquel is training multiple times a day, starting with a morning run.
So, what are you listening to today?
I have a mixture.
Raquel used to hit the treadmill. Now she prefers running in her own neighborhood.
I would run by all these streets that I've grown up on. All these streets where I have all these memories, and people from the community would start honking at me and, you know, throwing me peace signs and, you know, pump it up.
Many of the people cheering her on were the same classmates she'd been in fights with. They told her that seeing her train inspired them to pursue their own goals.
I just realized that me boxing, it mended the broken bridges that are broken as we grew up when we were fighting over stupid things and didn't really understand. And when these kids see me running up and down these streets early in the morning and people see me shadow boxing, they're going to know that I come from where you come from. I'm just like you. I'm no different. We can do anything we set our mind to.
Raquel and her sister Tanisha are finding other ways to give back too. They founded a nonprofit for girls in the Bayview called Ladies in Power. It provides workshops on everything from financial responsibility to cervical cancer awareness. They're closed at the moment, but this coming year, they hope to relaunch with after-school programming. But for now, Raquel's main focus is the 2016 Olympics in Rio.
I'm hungry to prove to myself that I can do what I set out to do. I want to be able to go and get me my own gold medal. Brazil was where it started, so Brazil is where it's going to end.
It's a goal that Raquel is proud to say she's going to fight for. For Cross Currents, I'm Mitzi Mock.
That story was produced for the Sights and Sounds of Bayview Project, which is a collaboration between KALW and the San Francisco Arts Commission. The music you heard in it was by Third Street Productions, part of the Third Street Youth Clinic in Bayview. You can find more Bayview stories along with multimedia videos featuring original photography at kalw.org. Just click on Sights and Sounds of Bayview. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Gun violence has gone down in the last 20 years in California, but here in the Bay Area, some neighborhoods like the Bayview are still plagued by it. Across the Bay, Oakland has more robberies per capita than any other city in America. And the city is also reeling from a spate of recent killings, including a baby and an 8-year-old girl. People are proposing a lot of ways to fight the problem, from increasing cops on the street to community activism. A local arts project is also trying something new, theater. Based on the voices of mothers and grandmothers who've lost children to violence. What's unique about its approach is that it takes those perspectives to the exact street corners or BART platforms where their children were killed. It's called Our Hallowed Ground, the Love Balm Project. KLW's Jen Chien has more.
Them that got shall get, them that not shall lose.
You heard this voice floating over the plaza at the Fruitvale BART station. You might think it's just your everyday street performer. But this is different. It's a sunny and busy Saturday afternoon, and this singer has an audience, about 30 people, listening intently to her as others walk past. As she sings, candles are lit to form a square on the concrete just behind her. Then a community elder does a traditional African form of prayer called pouring libation.
So we may continue forward into our last breath in this divine chemistry. Yes.
A woman in a brown dress steps gently into the square and begins to hum. As a bus pulls away from the curb nearby, she speaks.
Oscar was born February 26th.
The woman is an actor, Ayodele Nzinga, but she's performing the words of a real person, Bonnie Johnson. She's the grandmother of Oscar Grant, the young man who was shot and killed right here on New Year's Day in 2009.
He grew up in our house as his mother was working. He was a very active young man.
Nzinga talks about Oscar as a child, a young man, and as a father. She describes her pain and anger after his death, and she says her faith helps her find peace. Then she sings.
So build your hope on things eternal.
I really wanted to kind of charge that ground, kind of take it back, kind of reclaim those spaces.
Arielle Julia Brown commissioned this work for a series of performances called Our Hallowed Ground, the Love Balm Project. It's based on testimonies of Bay Area mothers and grandmothers who have lost children to violence. Each one is performed in the very place where the young person was killed.
So the Love Balm Project came from an idea, a thought process I had on a trip to Rwanda.
She went there in 2010 with playwright Eric N., who's well known for using art as a tool to address trauma and violence. While in Rwanda, she learned about its community court system called Gacaca. It was set up to deal with the aftermath of the 1994 genocide. The courts took the form of community meetings, often held outdoors in a circle. Perpetrators and survivors would each speak openly about what happened.
And it was just very powerful that the perpetrator is no longer just in your head. Like, the perpetrator is there in person, and you have the opportunity to speak.
A major surprise in the Oscar Grant murder trial today.
At the same time back home, the trial of Johannes Meserle was happening. He was the BART police officer who shot Oscar Grant. Arielle Brown grew up going to church with Grant, and his grandmother, Bonnie Johnson, is her godmother.
I have those memories of him, and then he became this frozen in time 22-year-old black man shot on a BART platform. And I really was uncomfortable with that. I was working through memory and how memory served here and worked politically and within the justice system.
She wanted to address these feelings in her theater work and drew inspiration from what she learned in Rwanda. So, starting with her own godmother, she interviewed women who had lost children to violence. In 2012, she created a stage play based on their words, performed by professional actors. And this year, the project expanded to these site-specific pieces.
There's just so many community members who are specifically impacted by each of these narratives that have not come to a traditional theater space to see the work. And I really wanted to go to where those people were.
There's patchouli there.
I only light one for each direction.
On a residential block in North Oakland, performer Ayana Davis, also known as Mama Ayana, is preparing for a performance. She's lighting incense and setting up a small altar on a side table.
He was a wanted baby. Planned, born into a family and community that anticipated and welcomed him from the beginning.
Davis is performing her own testimony today, on the street where her son, Katari Gant, was murdered 6 years ago.
At 16, Katari told me two things. That he had a dream where he was told that he wouldn't live till he was 26. And because of that dream, he was going to live his best life.
Davis is the only mother in the Love Bomb Project who is performing her own words. She says she approached it as an opportunity to share her writing, but also as a form of healing.
Because every day, it's there for you. You know, it doesn't go away.
Arielle Brown wants these emotions to stay with the audience as well, and for people to remember that violent acts have happened right where they live. In Rwanda, Brown says, she was struck by how publicly people recognize the sites of the genocide.
You would see a banner, and then it would say, you know, this many people were killed here. This is the incident that happened here. And that's just not within our culture here.
Brown wants to change that, even if it's uncomfortable. Through her work, she wants to remind us.
Our witnessing violence is a political act.
And we can choose to not turn away. In North Oakland, I'm Jen Chien for Cross Currents.
The final installment of Our Hallowed Ground, the Love Bomb Project, takes place this Saturday and Sunday in San Jose. For more information, go to kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. For nearly 40 years, the first weekend of October has brought something unusual to the urban byways of West Oakland. It's cowboys on horseback riding through the streets. These guys are members of the Oakland Black Cowboy Association, and they dress in bright yellow Western shirts and Stetson hats. They come out each year with their horses and a pony named Michael Jackson to tell a hidden story of the West. In this piece from our archives, reporter Julie Kane spends a day on the urban range.
We're at the Oakland City Stables, high above the city on Skyline Boulevard. Members of the Oakland Black Cowboys Association, men and women in cowboy hats and boots with spurs, tend to horses or stand alongside the fence of a dusty arena to watch the riders.
So take your right foot, stick it in there, grab the horn, pull yourself straight up. Pull yourself straight up, like stand up.
The organization formed in 1974 to teach Oaklanders about the role African Americans played in the history of the West. Today, the cowboys, along with their horses, visit schools and churches, host an annual parade and festival, and hold fun days, like this one at the city stables, where they invite members of the community to get to know the horses.
Sorry, am I hurting you?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Julia Davis is 18 years old. She's excited to ride, but a little nervous about pulling herself into the saddle.
Okay. One, two. Wow. One, two.
There you go. Throw that leg over. There you go.
Okay.
All right.
And then, just like that, she's off, guided around the ring by one of the cowboys. A line of kids sits along the wooden fence, impatiently waiting their turn.
Everybody want to ride?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Michael Jackson should be here in about another, within an hour.
That's Wilbert McAllister. He's the president of the Oakland Black Cowboys Association. Michael Jackson is a pony,
a favorite with the kids.
Okay. I want to ride again!
McAllister grew up in the small Central Valley town of Madera, California, a place packed with cowboys. But McAllister didn't start wearing his trademark cowboy boots and hat until he was in his 30s.
So I just liked that image. That hat looked good to me all of a sudden. It didn't when I was a kid because I was raised up down there where the Caucasian boys wore the hats. They wore the boots, but that was like, that was them. It wasn't me. Not knowing the history of the cowboy. You know the history of the cowboy?
The history of the cowboy. Some scholars say that a third of Western settlers and cowboys were people of color, African American, Native American, and Latino. Mexican vaqueros taught the cowboy his trade, but McAllister says the word cowboy may actually come from the plantation language of slavery.
The term cowboy came from not the house boy, not the field boy, but the boy who milked the cow, who cleaned the cows, who did the wraps, all that stuff. They would call them cowboys. You didn't call no Caucasian man no boy. He was the owner, he was Mr. Charlie, he was this and he was the boss. But not never a boy.
I'm back in the saddle again.
And then when the silver screen come up, I guess the cowboy got a good term. They start calling Roy Rogers, Gene Autry, way before John McBride, way before him, Tom Mix. Cowboys, singing cowboys, whatever, but it was us.
Whoopee-tie-i-o, rocking to and fro, back in the saddle again.
And we were in the number coming out west. We were moving out west, and they hired us, and they put us on their trails, and we came out this way.
John William Templeton is a historian of African Americans in the West.
At the time when Hollywood was creating this image of what the cowboy was, the actual real cowboy was more often than not African Americans who were working the land and working with cattle and that sort of thing.
Templeton says that as far back as the 1500s, black people were on the frontier.
One of the things that we saw in looking at the Spanish settlement was that they would always send the people who had the darkest skin to the furthest outpost. So that's why 60% of the settlers of Los Angeles were black, and 60% of settlers of San Diego were black.
It's a kind of hidden history of the West, even for people who study it.
When I came up, I didn't know anything. I didn't know there was such a thing as black cowboys. All I knew was like the traditional cowboys, John Wayne, in the movies.
Alvin Brooks is a retired school teacher for the Oakland Public Schools. He's also the historian for the Black Cowboys Association.
What got me really interested was one lady came to school one day, and we had a Western day. And she said, "No, she was a black lady. She said, "That's just a waste of time because everybody knew there was no such thing as black cowboys."
Historian John Templeton says it's a common misconception.
When you ask yourself, "Oh, I didn't know there were black cowboys," then you should then ask yourself, "Well, what else don't I know about the West?" When we talk about black cowboys, we're talking about black ranchers, we're talking about black gold miners, and we're also talking about the buffalo soldiers. So black cowboys are the door opener to challenge the assumptions of what the history of the West is.
Back at the arena, Jalea Davis is returning from her horseback ride.
So how do I get down?
You're going to put pressure in this one.
Okay.
Right? Hold on to this with your right hand as you're stepping down.
Okay.
All right?
So I'm going to lean forward.
There you go. Whoop. There you go. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay.
It's like a champ. You did it like a pro. Huh? You sure you hadn't ridden horse a lot?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, don't worry.
I've only wore it once.
Once?
Mm-hmm.
Good job.
Yeah, I'm going to look into that and do it.
Good job. All right, next.
After her ride, I asked Davis if she's surprised to learn about the black cowboys.
I was more excited, more than surprised. It was just like, oh, really? Because I'm into all the whole, you know, black history and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, I'm just excited. I'm not really surprised because there's so much stuff, you know, that goes on with blacks and you'll never know. And it makes me want to go take horseback riding lessons so I can learn how to ride horses.
If the Oakland Black Cowboys Association and their horses have anything to do with it, this is one hidden history that won't stay hidden for long. In Oakland, I'm Julie Kane for Cross Currents.
You can find out more about the Black Cowboy Parade happening this weekend and where you can see it at our website, kalw.org. That's also where you can subscribe to the Cross Currents podcast.
I used to try to do like those people on the radio. I used to try to yodel like those people.
And that's it for today's edition of Cross Currents. The team includes Isabel Angel, Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Leela Day, Alyssa Kapnick, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Daniel Moore, Melanie Young, Jasmine Lopez, Seth Samuel, Raisu Sussman, Charlotte Silver, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. The band you're hearing now is the OCs. They're being interviewed this Friday in San Francisco for Sound Opinions. That's the rock talk show, which is heard Sunday afternoon on KALW. It's sold out, but don't worry. The OCs are playing three nights next week at the Chapel in San Francisco's Mission District. All of that information, along with more local music and more local stories, is at KALW.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.